All right, guys. So this might be one of the craziest stories I've ever come across in this space. And quite frankly, a lot of it is difficult to believe. So take this as just a fun story, but I'm actually going to parse this out and try to give credence to the elements of it that might actually be true and why I think it might not be true, but I don't know. At the very least, I want you to take this as just a super interesting story and just ask yourself, what if, as we're kind of going through this.
Traveling to consciousness, exploring spiritual journeys to find answers in uncertainty.
Conscious Monkeys, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of Catch Up with Clayton. And in this episode, I'm actually going to get into the story of a guy by the name of Randy Kramer. And I'm starting to think that I might start pivoting this series, the 0.5 episodes, if you will, into more of like this story arc of stories I find interesting, because I don't see anyone really putting this information out there. So let's get to it. So for your reference, Randy Kramer, I'll give you a quick high-level overview. He has reported, and he can send consistently reports that he spent about 20 years as a Marine in the U.S. Secret Space Program. Now, for the simplicity of this, anytime I say SSP, we're just going to say that that's the Secret Space Program. So I don't have to say United States Secret Space Program, because that's a mouthful. And his duty, his mission was very elaborate, very secret, and involves a base on the moon, involves going to Mars. And it's crazy because he claims that he spent 20 years completely off planet. Now, it's interesting because I don't even really know how to start this. How do you even start something like that? Well, let's take a step back and get to know this guy a little bit more. So he initially told his story under the pseudonym Captain K. And so my understanding is that he may not have originally wanted to be publicly known. I did read some articles that said that he did get permission from his officers to leak it, or to explain this information. And, you know, now that we're talking about it, that we said he's a Marine, I did find an article that put out that the U.S. Marine Corps said, quote, "There is no record of a person named Randy Kramer ever having served in the U.S. Marine Corps." Now, if that's pretty powerful stuff. My thing is, though, is if he's working for a secret space program, the SSP, I doubt that they're going to even have that record. And even if they did have that record, they would probably delete it. And if they didn't delete it, wouldn't they deny it? So I'm not sure how much effort we can put in there, but that's the stuff that's out there. And of course, I'm putting my opinion in with this, so use your discernment with everything that I'm saying here. So he claims, and this is where it gets interesting, is he said that he started his training for the SSP when he was only 4 years old. And it was through a program called Project Moonshadow. And this is interesting because if you don't know, there's only one side of the moon that faces Earth at all times. So the face you see when it's a full moon, that's the same side of the moon all the time. The way the moon orbits is that it's in a, I believe it's called a tidal lock. So the way it rotates and orbits the Earth, we only see one side of it. So there is what's called like the dark side of the moon. There's a side of it that's always in shadow. And, you know, prefacing this, I have heard things and read things that claim that there is a military base on the dark side of the moon. How much legitimacy there is to that, I have no idea. I have no physical evidence of it. Intuitively, there's something that feels right about it to me personally. But again, use your own discernment whenever it comes to this stuff. Now, for Project Moonshadow, he said that he was one of about 300 girls and boys who were, quote, covertly drafted to participate in this program. And he said that the girls, there was only about 20% of them in the group. He also mentioned that that ratio relatively was about the same for his entire 20-year stint, which I find pretty interesting that they'd have like this 80-20 percentile for men to female. You would think it would be closer to 50-50, but who knows? Maybe if they had to do some more heavy lifting physically. There is evidence here, as we get into it, that there was fighting and wars that were going on. So typically men do carry out the military stuff. I know that might be politically charged these days, but I feel like that's pretty consistent and an accurate statement. So take it or leave it. Now, here's where it's interesting. And this is kind of where time travel starts to get into the mix of this thing. So Randy Kramer, I don't know, I think I mentioned his name before. Randy Kramer is the guy we're talking about here. So Kramer recalls that there was a time during his childhood where he was taken out of his bed at night, and he explains that it feels like he was gone for days or weeks at a time. And when he would return to his bed, it felt as though he was traveling back in time to when he was originally taken. And he would wake up as if, you know, no time had passed at all, and he was still in the same place that he was whenever he woke up, if that makes sense. Like, you know, if the date was January 1st and he got taken away, he felt like it was January 14th, but then whenever he woke up, it was still January 1st. And I will say, interestingly, personally, I have had dreams where they have lasted and felt like 3 or 4 days. Legit, like, you remember so much shit that's involved in it that it feels like it's 3 or 4 days and weird shit happens. So I do want to put that out there. He was young, so it's very possible that he could have been a very active dreamer. And I don't know, because time travel actually does come up later in the story as well. And what's also fascinating is that there is technology out there that we start discussing actually in next week's episode with our guest on Monday that would actually allow us to bend time space and create our own time travel device. And so this technology, and I don't want to talk too much about it, excuse me, because we go in depth in this in Monday's episode this week. So episode 65, I think. So excuse me, I'm getting burpy. Whenever I get excited and there's juicy information coming. All right. I'll take this time to remind you guys, like, if you're enjoying this shit, please leave a rating. Just drop a 5-star rating. Be like, dude, this shit is crazy. And I appreciate it because it helps me do well in the algorithm, helps more people get this information, and hopefully you have like-minded individuals that you can share this stuff with. But I digress. Let's get back to Randy Kramer's story. So he kept having these dreams that felt like very long dreams. I mean, he claims that he thinks that he was actually doing stuff. This is when he started training, 4 years old, and he would wake up as if no time had passed at all. And where it gets interesting is when he turned 17, which was in 1987. And so I think this is important because it kind of puts things in perspective. So that means he would have been born in 1970, because time is very weird with this story. And so I want to make sure we have like a concise kind of timeline this. So born 1970, whenever he turned 17 in 1987, he was involuntarily, which is a great way of saying he was forced, to be recruited to be part of the Mars Defense Force. The Mars Defense Force, MDF. So apparently we got a Mars Defense Force, according to this, whose purpose was to protect 5 civilian settlements already in existence on Mars. So let's revisit that. So according to Randy Kramer's story, in 1987, we already had 5 civilian settlements already in existence on Mars. We're talking almost 40 years ago. There were 5 civilian settlements already in existence on Mars. My question really becomes is, how do you, like, let's assume, right? He said he had about 300 people who he was training with. So let's assume five settlements is about 300 people. How do you get that many people to Mars? Not to mention, we're talking about 1987, but here's where it's weird, is the technology that would be needed to pull all this stuff off was created initially popularized by Nikola Tesla. So it's not crazy, in my opinion, to think that this wouldn't exist, like that this is out of the possibility of our time, space, whatever. Or another option, maybe he's having just really fucking crazy dreams, or just one really long dream of 17 years. Man, I don't know, but we're going to keep going with this story. It's a cool story. It's a fun thing to go through. So let's just keep pushing through it. And, you know, again, you discern. So here's what's interesting though, about the Mars Defense Force, is that this actually wasn't even sponsored by any government or governmental agency. And even more so, it wasn't only the United States who was a part of this. Apparently it comprised of also the United States, and then also Germany, Russia, and China. And that's where it's interesting, right? Because if Russia and China wanted to send people up into space and just send them wherever, they absolutely could do it and nobody would ask questions or no. When it comes to the United States, it for some reason feels like it would be more difficult, but who knows? Let's keep going with the story. So the whole premise of this is, it's like kind of funny because, like, on the surface, right, you go back to 1987, United States, Germany, Russia, China, they're not getting along well on Earth. So it's interesting that they would work together on forming the MDF. Let's see here. We also got information that Kramer became a captain in the United States Marine Corps in this program, and was given top secret clearance, a necessary requirement for those participating in the MDF, which is interesting, right? Because it seems like they say this is the United States Marine Corps, and then the SSP is a step underneath it, and then the MDF is like a side thing. So that's also another thing that's kind of tricky for me to follow, is like the organizational chart that kind of flows with this. Now, here's where it gets interesting. When Randy Kramer actually starts his mission, his off-world tour, if you will. So Kramer left Earth, and his first stop was not Mars. It was, in fact, the moon. And it's interesting because he says that there's a base on the moon, and he believes that it was established around 1953 or 1954. Now, what's interesting about this is, again, it competes with our current understanding, which is that we originally landed on the moon in 1969. So why does he think this? He, I guess, believed that this was a 1950s base based on the compound's interior decor, noting that the color and the type of carpet and the paint on the walls was clearly from the 50s. So that's why he guessed that it was established in 53 or 54. Maybe he heard other things that would have implied this as well. So quite frankly, I don't know for sure, right? It would compete with the theory of the 1950s and so, or the 1969. So I don't know. It's difficult, right? Because now this is another thing that the timeline is kind of shifting our current understanding. So maybe, what if he's from a parallel timeline? What if he kind of got shifted into this timeline from a different one? I think that's also a possibility, but again, this would come back to that technology that we're talking about, which we'll kind of get into that. So let's just keep this fan fiction. I mean, this dude says it's legit, and I don't know if he has any crazy things to back it up, right? I don't know if there's any physical things that validate what he's saying. And I think that would really be it. We don't really have a smoking gun, at least up until this point in the story. So a big question that kind of gets proposed at this point is, what was the purpose of troops going to Mars in the first place? Well, according to him, there were three primary purposes for sending secret military-like troops to Mars. The first one, to establish an extraterrestrial defense for Earth. which I don't know, it kind of sounds a little weird. I mean, I guess it would be nice to have another planet to help defend you from other things, but why not just do it here? Again, I guess it would help with the covert nature of this type of thing would be to do it off planet. Number two, and this is a weird one, to claim US, to claim Mars as a US territory, which is weird. And I say it's weird because they created this group that was comprised of the United States, Germany, Russia, and China. So this one could be like the subset of, you know, of the purpose, if that makes sense. Like Randy Kramer or the United States, their like side mission was like, oh, we need to make this a US territory. So we'll kind of just like stab Germany, Russia, and China in the back once we figured this out. That's possible. But number three is the craziest, and it's to get Martians accustomed to having Earthlings present on their planet. That's wild to me, right? Because to get Martians accustomed, that means that there are beings living on Mars right now, which is super wild, right? He's basically saying that there are Martians living on Mars. And he claims that these are the two main indigenous intelligent species on Mars. You ready for this? One is the infamous reptilians, which I'm sure you've heard about if you're in this space. And the other ones are insectoids, which I haven't heard of before reading Kramer's accounts. Definitely something to look into. I have not looked up pictures. But this is kind of where it gets comical. Right here is where it says at Kramer's initial briefing, he was told that these were, quote, native savages and beasts, end quote. And whenever I read that, I don't know where your mind went, but whenever I read that, my first mind went to Pocahontas about, you know, whenever the colonizers came into America and were like, oh, these are the native savages and beasts. And I was like, ah, shit, this is playing out again. So it tracks. It tracks with the psychology that we're dealing with here. But maybe he stole this from Pocahontas. I don't know. You be the judge. I'm just relaying the information. Don't shoot the messenger, right? Figure it out for yourself. I'm pretty enthralled with the story. So let's keep going. So after being told that they were native savages and beasts, he soon learned that they were an evolved species. Like they had consciousness. They had their own culture. They had their own intelligence, their own civilization. And where it's interesting is, and I guess this is where it would be because we can't see it. He said their homes were mostly underground, and Kramer frequently would refer to them in interviews as living as kind of like these hives or these nests, which I also find very funny because I went to a Mars exhibit that was in downtown Pittsburgh a little while back. And this hive or nest structure is kind of what our plan is right now. If we were to colonize the moon or Mars, we would need to create kind of like underground structures. At least that's our initial thought. So it's interesting. So I mean, that's how it would happen, right? I mean, obviously there's no structures on the surface of Mars, at least that we know of. I think there might be an obelisk that people have seen and found interesting, but I digress. And so at first, there's where we get into like a little bit of the story with these indigenous people, See, I don't know if I like that phrase, indigenous people, because they're not people, right? I mean, they're definitely like sentient beings, but people, indigenous people. So at first, the indigenous intelligent species treated the humans from Earth as like neighbors. As long as their nests and hives were not disturbed, there was no problem. They seemed more interested in maintaining their territory rather than fighting. Even so, there were frequent skirmishes. Again, sound like Pocahontas, the colonization coming in with the Indians. The humans and Martian natives became weary of fighting and actually signed a treaty agreeing to peace. Oh, so that's amazing. Now, this treaty had two parts to it. The first part is that the humans would not invade the sacred places of the Martians, the Martian indigenous Martians, right? Fair enough, right? Don't go in our holy sites, which is interesting again, because that's something we do here, right? I remember I was at Temple Mount, which is in Jerusalem, and there was like a certain time frame where if you weren't Muslim, you had to leave the area. It kind of scared me a little bit because I didn't know what was going on, but that's a different story for a different time. So the second part of this treaty required the humans to work together with the reptoids. See, that's interesting because, see, like in this article I'm reading, they say reptoids here, but they're reptilians. So I don't know if this is like a spelling thing or what, but they do actually reference them as reptoids, but I'm going to call them reptilians. So the second part of this treaty required the humans to work together with the reptilians and insectoids to fight an invading species of reptoids known as the Draconians. The Draconians were vicious and evil, but the joint venture was successful and the Draconians withdrew. That's interesting. I have heard of the Draconians before. So that's interesting there as well. Let's keep going. And what's also actually, before we move on, I guess on Mars were reptilians and insectoids. But then if reptoids, maybe it's like the meta word that they use. So like, you know, primate. Would be equivalent to reptoids. Reptilian would be equivalent to human, and Draconian would be equivalent to monkey. Does that make sense? So maybe reptoids like this meta word for the type of humans or the type of intelligent beings that they are. And so here's the deal. They cleared out that invading species, but then that wasn't the last fight. So Kramer gets emotional whenever he talks about this last battle that he participated in before leaving Mars. And I would love to find an interview with him because I think that'd be really telling. A lot of the stuff I've read, he is pretty consistent with what he says. So I think that's a plus one, but again, we need a lot more than plus one, but let's get into this. So the last battle that he participated in before leaving Mars, for some reason that he was never able to understand, he was ordered as part of a 1,000-man force to go into one of the sacred tunnels of the reptoids and capture an artifact. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Even on another planet, we still don't want to respect treaties. This was in direct violation of the treaty. Yep. And Kramer expressed his concern to his commanding officer, who agreed with him, but said that the orders came from headquarters and the mission had to be accomplished. Quote, "We all got our orders, so go do it," the officer told him. This is also something I find fascinating. Our inability to just not be able to stand up to authority like that. Like, look, this is wrong. I don't want to participate in it. And the ripple effect that has, I don't know, in my opinion, but maybe it's easier said than done, but here we are. I just maybe encourage you guys to stand up to authority whenever they're telling you shit like this that you know in your heart you disagree with. So what happened in this crazy thing? The men went through the underground tunnels and came to a large dome, and it was reported to be about the size of the superdome or astrodome. And they lost all communication with headquarters when suddenly doors all around the edge of the arena opened and out charged the reptilians swinging large bladed weapons. Kramer said it was like being in a blender. Kramer was one of about 35 men who survived. While he was recovering from his wounds, his superior officer met with him and offered him a pilot position. That sounded great to Kramer. He spent the last 3 years in the SSP as a pilot on the moon. Wild. Just wild. We still don't. Oh, we're going to break this treaty. It's really interesting. I guess he's probably out of the loop at this point of the ramifications of that occurring. So then when his 20 years of service were up, he spent several weeks on the moon for a, quote, reverse aging, quote, process so that he could return to Earth and, quote, be inserted back into his original timeline in 1987, end quote. His memories of his 20 years of service were suppressed and did not return to him for many years. again, so here's where it comes back to the timeline, which is a reverse aging process. And again, this goes back to the technology that we talk about in next week's episode. And I know I'm plugging it, but you're going to have to really listen to it to fully grasp this concept. And I know it's a difficult one because I'm still trying to grasp it. And quite frankly, this comes down to like one of those like proof things. And it's kind of difficult because the way that this technology works is that it doesn't work with the physical world as we see it today. It's actually completely breaks our model of physics. And so it makes it difficult to explain it or to even prove it based on that thing. But if you could show yourself literally reverse aging someone, then I mean, that would be pretty damn good proof if you ask me. And again, inserted back into his original timeline in 1987. Again, this is a crazy idea. I mean, multiple timelines. We've been talking about this for a while. I mean, it's just, I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. It's really just a wild story. But here's some other interesting facts that make it even a little bit more wild, or maybe a little bit more believable, or add some more questions that need to be answered. So it's even more wild. This is even more wild that after he started telling his story, at least six other men who said that they served in the SSP on the moon and on Mars at different times. So although they're similar, none of them ever served together. And quite frankly, none of them really knew about each other until they started revealing their experiences. And they were like, holy shit, all this stuff syncs up with what I experienced. And like, I experienced this too. So I guess take that or leave it. And another element of their story that they all kind of remembered. So it's interesting, right? Because Kramer kind of says that he like was basically forgot. Where does it say it? That these memories were suppressed in him. That there was some sort of mind altering that they wanted to kind of erase. I'm thinking of like Jason Bourne, you know, he's like this hitman and he kills the guy and then he doesn't remember why he killed this person or how he killed them. And so it's interesting. It's just really interesting that for many years after he was just like, I wonder what he thought about his like life. Like, what did he do for his life? I mean, I guess he thought nothing happened because he was just reinserted to his original timeline in 1987. But what was he doing? In 1987, he was originally recruited as part of the Mars Defense Force. So that's interesting, though. So he should have remembered being a part of Project Moonshadow, which was from the age of 4 to 17. Well, so then that's also interesting. So then he must have came back to Earth at the age of 17. He had this whole experience and then came back at the age of 17. And guys, I really apologize if this whole timeline is weird because it's weird to me too. So let me try to walk you through it in case you're struggling a little bit here. So basically at birth, he was born. When he became 4, he started having those wild dreams where he was covertly drafted, Project Moonshadow. And then once it hit 17, right? So imagine his life as a straight line. And then once it hit 17, imagine like a fork. Like, so his timeline kind of forked off. And this is whenever he joined the Mars Defense Force. He had all these crazy like remembrances of this battle with Martians. And then, you know, this was 20 years, right? He experienced 20 years of this like forced timeline. And then after his 20 years of service were up, it's almost like that fork reemerged back into his 17-year-old self. So it's super fascinating, man. I don't know how your brain can even handle. It's hard for me to explain it. I can only imagine if you actually live something like that, how you could actually remember that or even like operate in the world having that memory. But allegedly, here he is doing it. And so it's interesting too, because so here's kind of where their stories diverge a little bit. If we're getting back to those six other men who talk about it, they all recall different methods of traveling. But the core fundamental piece that links all their, let's call it, different traveling methods together is through a portal. Stargate, Could it be like a Stargate? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Could it be a Stargate? I don't know. Maybe it's a Stargate. So this is what actually allowed them to quickly travel to the off-planet locations. And they say that they all communicated with the indigenous Martians through telepathy, which, if you ever look up the work of Dr. Dean Radin, telepathy is actually being proven to be real. I think it's something we've all kind of thought about before as being real, but they're actually starting to prove that it is real. And if you don't believe me, it's that feeling you get that someone's about to text you or call you, or you start thinking of someone and then they text or call you. That's kind of a link of telepathy. But you know, where we're at in our current level of understanding of the world and the universe, we haven't fully embodied as humans the ability for telepathy at this point. So this is crazy. And here's what's also amazing, and I kind of skipped over this earlier, is that, and I really don't know if this helps or hurts. I don't know. I don't know if this information supports or dismisses them, but they all claim, all these men who served in the SSP, even Kramer himself, they all tell stories that report that the air on Mars is in fact breathable, that you can breathe the air on Mars, which doesn't make sense to me, because our current understanding of Mars is that you can't do that. There's no atmosphere. So to really deep dive and investigate that point, I think you need to understand how or why we currently believe there's no atmosphere. Now, in my opinion, it's because we probably don't see clouds, which are indicative of our atmosphere. So can you have an atmosphere without clouds, without rain? Like, is that even possible? I don't know. I'm just proposing questions that I would ask if I had would it be a geologist, something like that on the podcast? So it's just wild. Kramer started telling this story in 2006, and he's just basically on a mission to continue and convince people that this secret space program's a thing. That we have civilizations established on Moon, Mars, and perhaps other planets in the solar system. So I don't know what to make of this, guys. I found his email. I've been thinking about emailing him. I'm not sure where I'm at on that quite yet. Maybe I should email him. Let me know. Shoot me a message on Instagram at Traveling to Consciousness or at Clayton Kuteri, and let me know. Say, hey, dude, you should get Randy Kramer on the podcast. Shoot him an email. I haven't been convinced yet to do it. Part of me doesn't know if I should be in this position of giving people a platform if for some reason their story doesn't check out, but maybe it's just like one of those fun things where it's just like, okay, well, you're a fun story. So hopefully, at the very least, thank you for listening to this entire thing. Hopefully you found this as a fun story, and I really hope you're interested in next week's episode, because we're going to dive into what this person calls scalar light, scalar energy, and that's kind of the field of energy. And maybe I should have mentioned that earlier, but I'm mentioning it now. That's kind of the energy or the field that we're talking about whenever he's talking about reverse aging and teleportation and all this stuff. So it's definitely a story that I find interesting. There's pieces of it that resonate with me. There's also pieces of it that contradict what we've been told to believe, even as well as 50 years ago, which is kind of crazy to think, because we all remember things a certain way. It invites the idea of timelines and different dimensions, which we've been experiencing in our physical human realm a lot more. And he's been saying this since 2006, which I always find super interesting. So I don't know what to tell you guys. I mean, a lot of it makes sense to me. A lot of it seems plausible, but it would rewrite a lot of the things we know. And so my mind kind of goes to a different timeline, and then he got inserted into ours, maybe accidentally. I don't know. A lot of this is kind of over my head, but I'm really curious on what you guys think. So shoot me a message. Let me know if I should get him on. Let me know what you think of this whole thing. Go download the Traveling to Consciousness app. It's going to get you'll be able to actually communicate with other people in there. So like when you listen to a podcast, there's like a comment section, so you can actually communicate with people who are also interested in this type of stuff. So I highly recommend you go there, especially if you want to connect with more people in this field. Go down in the show notes below. You're going to see that it says website and app. You'll click there. You can download it on iOS and Google Play Store. Also in the show notes is my master link. So I also have a Telegram group. So if you're not crazy about the idea of signing up from the app and speaking to people on there, you can also go to the Telegram group and also can talk about this. That's also another good place to shoot me a message, because I try to, not super active in there personally, but I try to get in there to talk with you guys as much as I can, usually at least once or twice a day. And yeah, guys, just keep your mind open. Keep your mind open to the possibility of things. So I'm not saying any of this is fact, not saying any of it is fiction, but I am saying that it's all super interesting. And I am also saying that I will see you all in the sixth dimension.